He was the man who stole the plans for the atomic bomb. A brilliant physicist, a devoted communist. A spy hiding inside the most secret project on Earth. This is the story of Klaus Fuchs, a man who believed he could serve two masters, science and the Soviets. To hear it, search for The Bomb on the ABC Listen app.
Religion and politics often clash. So what happened when they almost tore apart the soul of a man who built a political movement that dominated America for almost 40 years? Hello there, this is the Religion and Ethics Report. Andrew West on ABC Radio National, ABC Listen, and across the Pacific on Radio Australia. Long before Donald Trump upended traditional conservatism in the US, there was another charismatic figure who was reshaping the Republican Party. He was writer William F. Buckley. He was the first editor of the National Review, which is perhaps the most influential political magazine of the 20th century. Ronald Reagan, for example, was a particular enthusiast for its ideas. But there was another force in Buckley's life, and it often conflicted with his politics. It was the Catholic Church. Sam Tannenhaus is the author of the acclaimed new biography, Buckley, The Life and Revolution That Changed America.
Catholicism was the essence of Bill Buckley. He grew up the son of two extremely devout Catholic parents, in particular his mother, who was a daily communicant, went to Mass every day. Bill Buckley considered in his youth becoming a priest and decided instead to go into politics with the results we all know. But it was very dear to his faith and to his ideas about politics and life in the modern era.
Yeah, we're going to flesh that out because this is such a key to understanding Buckley in your book, which is called, as I said a moment ago, Buckley, The Life and Revolution That Changed America. He was, as the book points out, though, so instrumental to the founding of modern conservatism that held for 50 years, at least until Donald Trump sort of upset things. That's why he is so significant. But did his political ideology ever compete with his Catholicism to shape him?
It did at a few crucial moments, and the most celebrated or controversial of these came in 1961 when the new Pope, John the 23rd, issued his encyclical, Mater et Magistra, Mother and Teacher, in which he called for the capitalist nations of the West to be more generous in distribution of wealth to the poor. And Buckley really objected to this with a papal letter. It was not an absolute instruction. It was more a guidance for Catholics. But Buckley objected because John the 23rd seemed to ignore the evils of communism and instead emphasized those of capitalism. And he objected in print. He said the encyclical was a venture in triviality. And those three words got him in a lot of trouble with conservative as well as liberal Catholics in the United States.
Yeah, I'm going to come back and excavate that chapter of Buckley's relationship, albeit indirectly, with Pope John the 23rd, because it is so fascinating. I've got to tell you, I once met Bill Buckley. I was an undergraduate. I think it was 1989 or 1990. He'd come to Australia to record some episodes of his PBS television show, Firing Line. I remember going along to this campus event. I was rather pompous at the age of 20 or 21 and thought I was going to challenge Bill Buckley. I was utterly charmed by him, if not his ideology. But I've got to say, Sam, he struck me in style and disposition as very un-Catholic. In fact, if anything, he struck me as a WASP, a white Anglo-Saxon Protestant. He was part of a particular class of Catholics, I'm assuming, in the United States.
Yes, a very small and rare group, in part because Buckley's parents, his father came from South Texas, close to the Mexican border, and his mother came from New Orleans, two highly Catholic areas in what was then very Protestant America. So Bill Buckley was the rare Catholic who grew up thinking of himself as belonging to the most elite upper caste in American society, which by contrast, for instance, the Kennedys did not. The Buckley family was often compared to the Kennedys. They had a lot in common. They were wealthy, they were attractive, they were Catholic, they were from the Northeast, grew up in the Northeast, Buckley did in Connecticut, in New England. But they had a sense of ownership of the culture that the Kennedys never did, partly because the Buckleys came from this frontier area in Texas, so that American myth was engraven in their identity, but also because of this idea of a Catholic elite that Bill Buckley and his nine siblings grew up with gave him a patrician aspect that, you're right, very few Catholics in America then or since ever had.
Well, yeah, except, Sam, would it not be true to suggest that by the 1950s, there was a Catholic establishment of the country club and the regatta? It was certainly a minority, but wasn't Buckley representative, if you like, of at least an emerging Catholic aristocracy?
That's exactly what he was. There's a famous sociological study published in that period. It's the book that coined the term WASP that you mentioned before, white Anglo-Saxon Protestant. And it referred to Buckley and people like him as belonging to a new ethnic aristocracy. So they didn't have the Puritan heritage that the oldest families did, but they'd been established in the United States, again, like the Kennedys, for several generations. They went to the best schools. Buckley's sisters did not go to convent colleges. The Kennedy women, Jack and Robert Kennedy's sisters, all went to convent colleges. Buckley's six sisters did not, or rather five of the six did not. They went to very elite private schools in the United States. So there was already a kind of merging of their sophisticated Catholicism with the higher Protestantism of the Northeast in the United States. So in that sense, Buckley was very much part of an emerging group. And you know, I keep mentioning the Kennedys because Jack Kennedy was elected in 1960. Buckley turned 35 that year. He was 7 or 8 years younger than Jack Kennedy. And at that point, a new pathway opened for Catholic intellectuals in particular. Andrew, and I think maybe you're getting at that a little bit too. There was the great magazine Commonweal, that liberal magazine that was also Catholic. It was a lay magazine, but it was written very much for Catholics, written by Catholics and read by Catholics, very broad and diverse in its interests. Catholics, for the first time, emerged from the shadow of a kind of intellectual ghetto to really engage with the broader issues of the time. And that's when Buckley became a really major figure in American life.
Yes, here on ABC Radio National, it's the Religion and Ethics Report with me, Andrew West. We're speaking with Sam Tannenhaus. He's the author of the highly acclaimed new book, Buckley, The Life and Revolution That Changed America. It's the story of William F. Buckley, the founder of one of America's seminal magazines, the National Review, and also the man who laid the groundwork for the conservatism that three or four presidents would later follow. Sam, yes, you've mentioned Kennedy a lot. In 1960, America is on the cusp of electing its first Catholic president. How did Bill Buckley respond to this moment? Because while Jack Kennedy was not quite the flaming liberal that his energetic followers have claimed, he was still, broadly speaking, a man of the centre-left. How did Bill Buckley, the conservative, respond to the Kennedy moment?
Buckley admired Kennedy personally. His charm and his wit and his style, not so different from Buckley's own, but he really disagreed with him on politics and religion. You probably are aware of this. There's a famous remark that Jackie Kennedy, the president's wife, said at the time, "I don't understand why people are opposed to Jack Kennedy being elected president as a Catholic, because he's so poor a Catholic."
I do.
He was not He was not especially devout. She said, now, Bobby Kennedy, he was a truly devout Catholic. Bill Buckley thought Kennedy wasn't Catholic enough. And there was a controversy at the time in which Jack Kennedy delivered one of the most famous speeches in America on the separation of church and state, because he was being attacked by Protestant clergymen, some of them very famous. Billy Graham and Norman Vincent Peale were probably the two most famous Protestant church leaders in America. They both distrusted Kennedy and said if he were elected, America would become dominated by Vatican teachings. Bill Buckley wrote a letter to the New York Times and says, this gets it exactly backwards. Kennedy ought to be more dedicated to Vatican teachings, because then he would answer to a higher authority than just the wishes of his constituency. Buckley turned around later, of course, and opposed the church himself very briefly. But he wanted a more Catholic rather than less Catholic Kennedy. And there's one other thing to say about that, Andrew, which is, to Buckley's mind, if Kennedy wasn't really serious about his Catholicism, well, then what was he serious about?
You see, again, this comes back in a way to something that intrigues me. In relation to their Catholicism, there was an aesthetic difference, wasn't there? And I know this having read a good, you know, close to 30 years ago now, his book, Nearer My God. Bill Buckley was very much into the aesthetics of Catholicism, the mysticism of it. And I gather he thought that these are the things that Jack Kennedy just shook off too lightly. His was an almost sort of low church kind of Catholicism, not Buckley's style at all.
Well, one of Buckley's good friends from that period said, Bill Buckley isn't really a conservative. He's a Spanish Catholic aristocrat. I mentioned how his father came from South Texas near the Mexican border. Well, in fact, his father made his first fortune in Mexican oil. And the father, William F. Buckley Sr.'s idea of the most sophisticated and admirable of gentlemen was a man of the church who came out of really the Counter-Reformation Catholic Church. And he filled the family's mansion with 16th and 17th century artwork, much of it that he'd bought in Italy and Florence. The house had iconography and figurines that came from the earliest days of the Spanish conquest of Mexico. So you're right, it was this very old world and aestheticized or aesthetic Catholicism. That's one reason Buckley was such a devotee of classical music and loved his Bach and Scarlatti, because that was spiritual music done with the highest artistry. And that's how Buckley viewed his Catholicism. Whereas the Kennedy seemed more, these are the cliches of the moment, so your listeners will have to forgive me. They seemed more the kind of Irish immigrant lace curtain Catholics. So Bill Buckley always kind of looked down on them. And he had the wonderful comment he made around the time Jack Kennedy was elected. And he said, people keep comparing us, the Buckleys, to the Kennedys. And he said, I don't know why they do. He said, Jack Kennedy's father, famous patriarch Joe Kennedy, was very close to the Irish homeland. And Bill Buckley said, the first time my father went to Ireland was for the Dublin Horse Show in 1939.
I mean, you knew Bill Buckley for the last 30 years of his life, maybe longer, Sam, and you visited him at his house in Connecticut. Was the house still like that? Was it a repository of all those artifacts? Because part of me thinks it resembles an old English country house, but it sounds something very different. Was it still like that to his last days?
The house he that lived in with his wife, Pat, and my wife and I visited them frequently in that house in Connecticut, that was more like an English country house, though in the Spanish style. The home he grew up in Sharon, which is in the northwest part of Connecticut, almost seems like a Spanish hacienda. There's a beautiful glassed-in atrium with plants and mosaics. Looks like it's something that could come out of Madrid. And his father, who loved architecture and design, was responsible for all of that. Mm. Bill Buckley's wife, Pat, was from Vancouver, and she was very Protestant. She was very much of Anglican. And so those tastes combined in the homes they had in New York and also in Connecticut.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned there, Sam, two names that will echo down through the next few decades as quite influential in American politics, Billy Graham and, to a lesser extent, Norman Vincent Peale. Norman Vincent Peale, of course, later came to sort of renewed prominence posthumously as the man who had once been Donald Trump's Presbyterian pastor. They, as you say, were very critical, not just of Jack Kennedy, but of the growing Catholic population in the United States. Did Buckley, as the founder of this very influential conservative movement, see Protestants and the emerging evangelical movement as rivals or allies in his broader political quest?
He came to see them as allies in that earlier period when Kennedy came under attack. Buckley did not so much defend Jack Kennedy as really ridicule Norman Vincent Peale and Billy Graham. He found them kind of absurd. Again, that's the aristocratic Catholic. But Buckley never emphasized Catholicism, or seldom did, over his being Christian. And of course, as you know very well, the Episcopal Church and the Catholic Church, many of their services and liturgy and devotions are not that different. So Buckley described his great magazine, National Review, never as a Catholic magazine, but often as a Christian magazine. And in the 1980s and 90s, when the powerful political movement emerged under evangelical and fundamentalist leaders like Jerry Falwell and Pat Roberts in a later generation, Buckley was quite aligned with them. He shared their values, the values of family, the values of philanthropy as opposed to government solution of social ills. So he was able to forge a pretty good alliance with them, as he also did with a Jewish group called the Neoconservatives. Mm. So Buckley was very Catholic, as we like to say, in that sense, in the broadness of the alliances he formed.
And we'll come to that interesting connection with the neoconservatives in a moment, because it actually has implications when he decides to hand on the leadership of the National Review magazine. Let's talk, though, now about this clash, indirect but still quite jarring, as you say, for many Catholics, that he had with Pope John the 23rd. John the 23rd releases, I think, in 1961, this encyclical, Mater et Magistra, and it really emphasized or built on the Catholic social teaching, a preferential option for the poor, the rights of workers and labor unions, although it, again, did not embrace socialism. How did this pose a problem for Buckley? Not simply the obvious one that he didn't agree with the political undertones of the encyclical. There was something even more problematic for Buckley about that. What was it?
Buckley was writing at the time of the revolution in Cuba, the rise of Fidel Castro. And something that puzzled me, and I wrote about this, as you know, is why at that time when Buckley objected to John the 23rd criticizing capitalism so heavily while saying so little about communism, I wondered why Buckley didn't make the obvious point, which he did later, that the threat to liberty coming in North America was coming from a communist who was imprisoning clergy and putting them on ships and sending them to Spain. First, a foreign clergy, and then even Cuban. Several of the bishops in Cuba were deported. And that was really what Buckley objected to. Yet when he made the argument at the time, he instead put it more in the terms of the ideological debates of the moment rather than the religious ones. And I think later he saw that was a mistake. And the real problem came, Andrew, because Buckley was a very sharp writer and debater, as you know very well. And so he used this almost taunting language toward the Pope when he said the letter was a venture in triviality. And what that did was to offend even conservative clergy in the United States and Catholics who were very close to Buckley told him this was a mistake. It sounded arrogant for him to write in that way in opposition to the Pope. And what Buckley said at the time was, if he ever had to choose between his conservatism and his Catholicism, the Catholicism would always come first. So it seemed odd that he chose this moment to challenge, to take on the leader of his church.
As a very old school, small O Orthodox Catholic, he really believed in obedience to the Pope and to the church's teaching. Now he suddenly decides, oh, this is a bit of church teaching I don't like. And this causes a problem, doesn't it? Because if he's going to be a sort of one of these early versions of the so-called cafeteria Catholic, you pick and choose which bits you want. Hard to criticize liberal Catholics in later decades when they choose to ignore papal teaching they don't like. That seemed to be his conundrum.
I agree. In fact, if you look at his criticism of Jack Kennedy, one of the points he made in that letter to the New York Times when he said Jack Kennedy wasn't Catholic enough is he criticized him explicitly for not being more obedient to church teachings, as you say. So why is Buckley all of a sudden disobedient to this one teaching? And he didn't really have a good answer. So what he did was to consult Catholics who were more learned than he was, including his very close friend at the time, Gary Wills, the great writer, who had actually studied for the priesthood, you know, had to be released from his orders to become a secular writer. And what Wills did was to study up on encyclicals and tell Buckley there was a long history of them. No one to that point had really examined the history of the papal letter encyclical the way Wills, who was very scholarly, did. And what he found was they were more consular teachings, advisements, than they were pronouncements. So you could disagree as long as you remained a truly devout, obedient son of the church. And that's where Bill Buckley did find himself in kind of a quandary, which he was able to solve in the end by commissioning Wills to write a brilliant study of papal encyclicals.
On the Religion and Ethics Report here on ABC Radio National, it's Andrew West speaking with Sam Tannenhaus, the author of the new book, Buckley, The Life and Revolution That Changed America. It's a magisterial biography of Bill Buckley, the American conservative thinker and writer, and I think at one point a failed mayoral candidate himself for New York. How would Buckley, and I'm really asking you now to speculate, given that civility, good humor, style was his hallmark. The book talks about his friendship with George McGovern, a man that Dick Nixon dismissed as a sort of a pansy poet socialist or something. But he died before Trump became president. You could be kind and call it a robust conservatism. You could also simply call it a more confrontational, even abusive conservatism. How would he view it?
Well, this is the conversation my wife, Kathy, and I have all the time because she knew Buckley very well, too. And something she points out that gets close to what you're saying is Buckley prized clear thinking and expressive, sophisticated language. He didn't like it when people didn't speak well and didn't have the sort of rich vocabulary he did, feel for the nuances of English and all its meanings. And now we're seeing something very dissimilar to that. So there's a kind of coarseness in the politics that I think he would object to. On the other hand, some of the ideology he would go along with. Buckley said very early when he was in his 30s, 1958, he told a famous American interviewer, Mike Wallace, that the counter-revolution he envisioned was one that would overturn the programs and the worldview created by Franklin Roosevelt during the New Deal, the origins of the American welfare state. That's happening now. It's being overturned. You know, something I would add that we didn't touch on, Andrew, is the idea in Catholicism of subsidiarity. Mm. And that's where Bill Buckley tried to work out his differences with the church. And some of your listeners will know, the Catholic ones in particular, that the idea is that you try to solve the problem in the most local way, and only as a last resort do you turn to the most powerful authority to assert values and rights or to redress wrongs. And so that's how you have the small C conservatism, we could call it, that goes with the large C Catholicism. I think Buckley, looking at politics today, would probably be as confused as the rest of us. Look at the reaction, for instance, to the terrible assassination of a highly religious young provocateur, Charlie Kirk. And there was a moment of universal sorrow and grief, followed by very aggressive ideas coming from the White House itself about how political dissent should be dealt with. It's hard to imagine Buckley being comfortable with that. The Catholic idea that mattered most to him, I realized as I studied his life, was charity. And charity is a foundation, as you know, of Catholic thought. And charity means kindness and love shown toward just about everyone, not this kind of narrow, exclusive choosing of sides. Yes, you have ideological disagreements, but in the end, George McGovern is your brother.
Yeah. You know?
And I think that's really what we don't feel in politics today with our really heightened polarization. There were polarizing differences in his time too, but they didn't override human considerations.
Yeah. This book is a very honest appraisal of Bill Buckley, even as you posit him as such an instrumental figure in American politics. He is very honest. I mean, you take him to task for opposing desegregation. And there was a certain freight of prejudice that he held on to, because what happened in the late 1990s, early 2000s, I think it was, when it came to choosing a new editor of the National Review. Now, Buckley had retired as the hands-on day-to-day editor, but he had two very intellectually impressive young candidates, David Frum and David Brooks. What happened there?
This turned out to be, to my surprise, one of the real controversies in the book. I mean, I was just stating what I found in the documentation, which is that Buckley, with the approval of one of his many advisors, another brilliant protege, George Will, the Washington Post columnist, decided that the editor of National Review should be what Buckley called a believing Christian. Didn't have to be a Catholic, a believing Christian from the United States. Well, Brooks was born in Toronto, but grew up in the United States. He's American, but he was Jewish. David Frum was from Toronto and is also Jewish. And in the end, for all the alliances and friendships Buckley had with Jewish intellectuals, he decided not to offer the job to either of these two quite qualified, promising, at the time, young intellectuals. In their 30s, either could have been a superb editor. Now, I don't know whether either would have accepted it. Younger journalists and intellectuals have told me that that was a more important moment than maybe even I realized. I'm a slightly older writer than they are, that at that moment to them, the suppressed anti-Semitism in the movement and in Buckley's own thinking maybe had never really gone away.
Sam Tannenhaus, he's an acclaimed American writer. We've been speaking about his new book, Buckley, The Life and Revolution That Changed America. Thank you very much for joining us on the program, Sam.
My pleasure, Andrew. Really enjoyed it.
You can follow us at ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks to producer Mandy Roberts. I'm Andrew West. Join us again for the Religion and Ethics Report.
ABCRN helps you understand the world. Find more of our stories on the ABC Listen app.